Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming. Welcome. So on Flag Day, I'm not sure if there's this thing called Flag Day. Do you know which day Flag Day is?
June 14th.
Wow, there we go. June 14th from the back. June 14th based on the fact that on June 14th, 1777, that's when the American flag, basically as we know it, basic patterns and colors and structure, was adopted by Congress. It wasn't made an official day, I think until the 50s and 60s, but it was observed as early ready as 1914. On a Flag Day, June 14, 1914, so Franklin Lane, Secretary of Interior, said as follows. He said that morning he had a conversation with the flag, and this is what the flag told him. I am no more than what you believe me to be, and I am all that you believe I can be. I am no more than what you believe me to be, and I am all that you want me to be. And what this highlights is that the flag, like so many things in our lives that we take for granted, is really what's called a social construction. It's just an idea that we've created as people that has been accepted by society. It doesn't exist in nature. It doesn't exist in the real objective world. It only exists in our minds. A flag, for example, is merely what? It's a piece of cloth, a material, dyed with certain colors in a certain pattern. It should have more meaning than that, than something that perhaps might warm you, your body, you might step on it as a mat. But the fact that the flag can be what you want it to be, it can be all that you make it to be, shows that we in our minds have convinced ourselves that it has more meaning. I mean, it's remarkable if you think about it. The very same flag, the red, white, and blue, adopted on June 14, 1777, in certain societies, in certain cultures that have created a certain social construct around it, they think it represents freedom. They think it represents the best things in the world. And yet, if you took out that same flag, the red, white, and blue with its stars, in some other society and culture, that flag represents infidelity, right? That flag represents the infidel. That flag represents the worst things in the world. It's the very same flag. In one side it represents one thing, freedom. In the other, it represents evil. On a national level, physically, it's the exact same flag. No one can dispute that. Made of certain materials, certain colors, with a certain pattern. But because of the social construction that's in our minds, so here in America, society has created the idea around this flag as all that it can be and represents freedom and liberty and justice. But in another society, whatever that society may be, that culture, based on their social construction, their socialization, how they pass that down to their children, that very same thing symbolizes and represents something else. That's a social construction. So I suppose that today is our Shabbos, which means the Sabbath, the one day of the week, but really Shabbos really means week. Shabbos means week counts for us, right? The 7 weeks. Shabbatos for Shavuot. Shabbos means the week. How week? The week is a social construction, like the flag. The week has no connection to nature. And not only that, I'd like to show with you, I'll show and discuss with you how not only is Shabbos, the week, a social construction, a pure one, but in Judaism, according to the Torah, it represents social construction in general, the idea of social construction, the very idea of Torah and Halakha. Everything is captured, represented by Shabbos, the week, the social construction. But first, let's start with some terminology. So, can you just scroll that action? Thank you. Yeah, I'm not scroll. Someone at the top of the page. Thank you, yeah. There you go. So, Eliyahu Zerubbabel, born in Israel, but has been for the past number of decades a professor of sociology in Rutgers University. He's written a number of books on sociology, particularly when it comes to issues of time. So he has a great book, The 7 Day Circle, The History and Meaning of the Week. So he parses into the following types of weeks, what he calls the quasi-week, and then the week. There's the week in its purest form, and then there's something that approximates the week it's like a semi-mini kind of a week. And he explains that the quasi-week is somehow based on nature. It approximates some kind of natural phenomenon, whether it be the moon, whether it be the sun, whether it be the constellations, any week, any way that we organize our lives, based on this time cycle that is somehow connected to some natural phenomenon, is a quasi-week, while the week is something that is completely dissociated. It has nothing to do with a natural phenomenon. So let's see the chart. We scroll down. So the idea in the chart, you'll see that we have a number of cultures, the length of their weeks, some background, and then the type of week it is based on Zerubbabel's category of thought. So I didn't really arrange this based on chronology. Historically, when these societies, cultures emerged, when they were dominant, and when they may have adopted a certain kind of a week, but more you'll see it's based on, it's organized conceptually. We have the Assyrians, then the Persians, miscellaneous, China, and some other Far East cultures, Egyptian, Greek, with the Babylonian influence, and then Judaism. So it's really interesting. So in the Assyrian culture, 7th century around, let's say, BCE, so there's evidence of what they used to call evil days. Evil days. And because of these evil days were the 7th, 14th, 19th, 21st, and 28th day of the lunar calendar. Right? So the 7th day of the month, based on the lunar cycle, which is about 29 days, 12 hours, and about 45 minutes. Right, the lunar calendar cycle is not 20 days long, it's closer to 30 days. So on their lunar cycle, they had these days that were evil days, and therefore they were commemorated as such based on some, of course, mystical kinds of notion that they had. The Persians, well, similarly, had the first, not the seventh, but the first, the eighth, the 15th, and the 23rd day, also of the lunar calendar. They observed it for some reason. They commemorated it because there was something special about these days, and of course, you see, follow kind of a seven-day kind of pattern based on these evil days. So again, so it's not so clear whether or not they actually had a seven-day weekly cycle, or just these days that kind of stood out, were sailing on the calendar. But either way, these things, as Roberto says, are called, now they're called quasi-weeks. They're called also what another sociologist called lunar weeks, because they're based on the moon. It's based on the cycle of the moon, just like our day, right, so it's based on, right, our day is based on, the night-day cycle is based on the Earth spinning on its axis. The yearly cycle is based on the Earth's revolution around the sun. So their special days also have to do with the moon cycle around the Earth.
Is Shabbat the only Jewish holiday?
Okay.
Is Shabbat the only Jewish holiday that's independent of the lunar cycle?
Correct. Yes. All the other holidays that we have are based exclusively on the lunar calendar, except for Pesach, which is also based on the solar calendar, and therefore in turn affects all other Yom Kippur as well. Because Pesach has to be, right, Chag HaAviv. It has to be the spring. The spring holiday. It really just captures what's so unique about Judaism and Torah, which I love so much, and that is all the times we find in the world based on different social constructions in societies, how they have different views, and oftentimes they're polar opposites, right? They're extremes. Some societies will be a lunar society, right? Based on the fact that they give significance to the moon. There it is again. Everyone believes the moon exists, but why does that matter to us? We see it. Right, and maybe it has some natural effects, but why should that matter to us? Why should we organize our calendar, our daily cycle around that? That's purely a social construction that only exists in our minds, in the collective mind of society. So some societies, particularly in the East, they decide to organize their lives around the moon. In the West, right, the sun exists. It exists for everyone. The seasons exist. That's physical. That's natural. The fact that there are societies that decide to organize their calendar around the sun to give the sun more significance than just the fact that he is right and he does all the things that it does physically, but to organize our days, our years around it, a social construction. There are some societies that only organize themselves around the sun. They completely ignore the moon. We'll get to that by the Egyptians in a moment.
So you have societies that are strictly lunar, societies that are strictly solar societies, and what's Judaism? We're both. Judaism is the connection, really. The coming together of both the East and the West. Judaism does not live in extremes. There are socialist societies and there are capitalistic societies. Judaism is both. We have a combination of both. There are solar societies and lunar societies. We have a combination of both. There are individualistic societies and there are collectivist societies. Ones that put extreme premium on the individual. The individual is everything. The individual must never be sacrificed for the nation. And there are others that say no. Family always comes before the individual. The nation always comes before the individual. And then you have Judaism, which is both. We value the individual and the collective. Unfortunately, makes things more complex and complicated because we have to figure out, therefore, how to navigate and negotiate between these two values. So yeah, so back to that. The only Shabbos is completely associated, disconnected from nature. Our holidays are all based on both the lunar and the solar calendar. You have the miscellaneous society, like I said, in the Far East. They also had 5-day weeks, they had 4-day weeks, and based on some kind of a month, like the 6 5-day weeks, a 30-day month. You had 4 8-4-day weeks, which is a 32-day month. Again, here too, it was all based on the lunar cycle. They were quasi-lunar weeks. And that's why, as the author points out, as Rubella points out, that they would have to, of course, somehow, you know, cut off some dates, skip some dates, because the lunar pattern is not, it's not a whole number. It's 29 and a half days. So every so often, they have to skip some days. You know, have non-days so they could start their cycle again. It's all based on nature. The Egyptians, who point out, they might have been the first culture to have a calendar independent of the lunar cycle. They had a 30-day month, 3 10-day weeks. However, and the Egyptians were, he points out, they had only a solar calendar. They worshipped the sun god. They ignored the moon. And they had their 10-day week. But again, even then was based on constellations. They had 36 constellations. And based on the 30-day calendar with 10-day weeks, they came up with some kind of 36 weeks in their own year. And therefore, it's interpretably with the 36 different constellations that are out there. Again, nature, just like our days is based on nature, the beginning of the axis, our year is based on nature, the Earth revolving around the sun, so too these quasi weeks are all weeks based on nature. The Greeks, with the Babylonian influence, they also had a 7-day week, but again, independent of the cycle, but based on planetary positions, that's why the names of the weeks. It has to do with planets, Saturn and Saturday and Mars and things like that. Has to do with planets because it's based on planetary positions. Apparently, a lot of these planets are the ones that you can actually see moving in the stars. You knew what to look for, and that therefore stood out to them. They gave those planets more significance. So they also range their weeks. Central days around these parts. But again, it's all based on nature. Comes along the Torah and Judaism, and for the very first time, they create a week, a cycle of living, a pattern of time that has nothing to do with nature. There is no correspondence whatsoever between the 7-day week that we have and nature. Nothing. And that's why you probably never get confused whether that is day or night, right? Whether it's day or night, or whether it's the fall or the spring, that you actually might forget what day of week it is. And there's actually more about that. What happens if you're stuck in the desert and you forget which day of week it is? You just don't remember. What do you do? Right? You start counting that today is Yom Rishon, and then you count 6 days and the 7 day is Shabbos, or you say, no, today is Shabbos, and I'll count Yom Rishon tomorrow, I'll start that count. It's confusing. But it only is confusing because there's no device that we have to figure out, right? But you can have competency of all kinds of devices to figure out where you are in the world, which direction it might be, is it day or is it night, maybe even what time of the year it is. It's impossible. It's impossible to figure out what day of the week you are. The only way you know it is you turn to your neighbor, someone else in society who has adopted the social construct of this creation that only exists in our minds, and we've accepted, and we ask them, oh, by the way, what day of the week it is. If we slow down, okay. So it says in the Zuhal, the terms quasi-lunar weeks and continuous weeks actually present two fundamentally distinct modes
of temporal organization of human life, of how we organize our lives in this world in terms of time. The former involving partial adaptation to nature, and the latter stressing total emancipation from it. And here's the key line. The invention of the continuous week was therefore one of the most significant breakthroughs in human beings' attempts to break away from being prisoners of nature and create a social world of their own. This is why the week represents social construction in general. Because our lives are organized around the week. That's how we pattern ourselves. That's how we schedule our activities. It's all based on the week, which is purely a social construction, and that represents all of our social constructions, such as a flag. So this takes us to the Torah's idea of Shabbos, the weekend, and what it demands of us, and its aspirations for us. We say every Shabbos night at Kiddush, and Maariv, I call it Tzvam, and the earth and the heavens, heavens and earth were completed, and all of this, right, all the entities, Vayirechol Kim Asum Ashvi, Rekhavi Shosho, and Hashem blessed the seventh day, and sanctified it, Tivosh Shabbat Tifom La'afto, so the other day that he rested from all of his work, Asher Baro Lekim La'afto, that Hashem had created to do. Hashem created to do. The Medrash notices that it doesn't say what we would expect it to say. Says the Medrash, Amar Rabbanya, Asher Baro Lekim Za'afto, Ainksid. Right? It should have said, but it doesn't. That which Hashem created and made. He finished. He created the world and made through 6 days of the week, the 7 days he rested. Should have said, because Hashem blessed the day, and he sanctified it, because he rested on that day from all the work that he created and had made. But it says, all that he created to be la'asot, future-oriented, says Rav Soloveitchik, and others as well, that every time we say Kiddush, what we are reminding ourselves of is not only that Hashem is creator, and this is such an important idea, and it's so, to be so inspiring. Not only that Hashem is the creator, but that he has invited us to be partners in creation with him. La'asot, that there's more to do. What else is there to do? Ein chadash tachat haShemesh. There's nothing new, naturally, physically speaking. Anything that we make, right, anything that we make, we have to use something, some kind of ingredient that was already there, right? That's why there's that famous story where some scientists compete with God about creating certain kinds of things that like said to Hashem, I can create anything that you can create, no problem. Whatever you created, flowers, I got it, right? The dog, no problem, right? A planet, I can do it. God says, okay, let's see. The time it goes and he cuts the dirt from the ground. God says, no, use your own dirt. There's nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun. So what does it mean that there's still more to create? Okay, that's certainly, I think, a revelation. I like this idea. It certainly does need to advance, right, nature, right, scientifically, right, to do so. Of course, there's all our scientific advancements, but, you know, in modern terms, even, you know, more in more basic terms, just as creating bread doesn't exist in nature. We've created that. We've imposed our creativity and our ingenuity on the fact that if you take a hard, wheat kernel, walk through that, how to grind it up, right, put it together with water, create something called fire, and then create a delicious bread. That's great. So it certainly means that as well, in natural terms. But also, says Rav Soloveitchik, it also tells us that the Torah is all about social construction. So the Torah has in mind for us that Hashem created the natural world in 6 days of creation, and what he asks us to do is, now please go ahead and create the human world. The world that doesn't exist in nature, that only exists in our minds. What is the ideal human world? So the last source that we set here from Rav Soloveitchik, he's interested in sociological creation, the state, society, and the relationships of individuals in the communal context. The Allah encompasses laws of business, torts, neighbors, plaintiff and defendant, creditor and debtor, partners, agents, workers, artisans, bailiffs, etc. Family life, marriage, divorce, police, social, conjugal refusal, the respective rights, obligations, and duties of husband and wife is clarified and elucidated by it. All these things don't exist in nature. Every single society, every single culture has to figure out for itself how it wants to organize itself, where it places its values, where what its values are, where it places its responsibilities and obligations. Let me talk about Zvon in Gemara here. I mean the boy. right? How it's so important to learn Torah, that Hashem has given us the blueprint of how to create a human society, right? It's Lahav Yom, our constitution. And we, like the Supreme Court jurors, we get to interpret the text, the constitution. What does Hashem mean, right? How does he want us to create our social, human world that only exists in our minds? Because every society, for example, has to figure out, is there a difference between a man and a woman? Now, physically, right? Certainly there is. But when it comes of gender roles, is there such a thing? So we ascribe, generally speaking, that we have certain expectations from men that, generally speaking, are different than women, as singles. And then when they get together as a couple, do we see them as just spouses? Or no, is this called a husband and a wife? And if we see their, those that they produce as just children, or their sons and daughters? Is there a difference between a relationship between a father and a son, and a father and a daughter? And is a father and son's relationship different than a mother's and her son's? And what I mean by that is, what are the expectations, right? What are the demands? What are the obligations that you need to a father and son that maybe a mother doesn't have? Or what you need between a mother and a daughter that a father doesn't have? Are there responsibilities that a husband has over a wife that she has obligations to her different than she has to make? We're learning tshuvas, right? We have in our world a tshuva, the tshuva delineates. And it puts there in black and white exactly the financial responsibilities from a husband to wife. That is a social construction. You have other cultures that are more dominated by the female. Another culture will put them as equal. An egalitarian culture. Those things are husband and wife. They're just spouses. They're just partners. Each one can negotiate what it wants for itself. There are no expectations. That's a social construction. And that's what we do when we're learning Shubis. Day in and day out, we're trying to figure out, right? Just go through. We're going through the Torah Shabbat, the written word, and of course Torah Shabbat Peh, trying to define what the Torah means, what Hashem's intents are for how to organize our society. It all exists in our minds. Even what we're learning specifically in the beginning of the year, the Masechta, the first word is Zesula, right? Is virgin. Even that idea, the social construction, the notion that we should care that there's a physical membrane, that membrane, we should give value to that membrane, that is just a social. There are some societies that just ignore it. They don't even know that it's there. We give value to it. The notion that there are certain activities that choose looser status of being a school, of being a virgin. That is only in certain societies. In other societies, you can be as promiscuous as you want. Right? The notion of virginity, but right, is something that's made up. And they're right. It is made up. It doesn't exist in nature. It only exists in our minds. And what we're working through the day is figuring out what values and possessions of chastity and modesty, family values, all these things are being reflected in the halachas that we learn. It all exists in our minds. So Hashem says to us, and we say it every single part on our Shabbos, we remind ourselves, Hashem bara lu la'asot. Hashem created to do. He created the natural world. Now it's our job to create the human world. That Shabbos, that's the social construction. Everything, almost everything that is important to us is the social construction. We live in a day where there's a clash of values, there's a clash of cultures, East versus West. It's all about this thing. What value, where do we place our significance? What's valuable to us and what's not? When we go out there into the world with confidence, and the confidence of conviction knowing that we have our Torah, we have our constitution that tells us, these are the values that we believe in. This is the social culture. This is the ideal, not nature necessarily, but the ideal culture that Hashem wants for us and perhaps to be a model in the entire world. Have a great day, everybody.
How do you know?
No point.
What is it?
I don't know.
I know how to do that. Lower.
Yeah. 97, we forget it, but it's up there. I'm going to check in. Have you done